Welcome to episode 75 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. This week, I'm in conversation once again with photographer and writer Hugh Graham, who was one of my lecturers when I studied photography at university. Okay, we see it time and time again, photographers going crazy about which cameras, which lenses, which lighting, and even which accessories they use. They're always quick to justify excessive spending or indulgence, citing why all this kit is necessary for the work they do. But at the end of the day, in any given industry, you just have to match your equipment to the job at hand. As Hugh rightly said, you don't use an elephant gun to shoot a rabbit. It's another lively debate this week, so regular listeners will know what to expect. For those of you who haven't heard our chats before, I really hope you enjoy the conversation. So, here we go. Welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 75. So once again, I am in the office of Hugh Graham, my one-time lecturer and colleague, and today we are talking about picking the right equipment for the job in hand. And this doesn't just relate to cameras and lenses and what have you, but the whole of your workflow, everything from computers to the vehicle that you drive to get you to your locations, anything like that. And this started off with a comment, Hugh, that you made pertaining to firearms.
Yeah, okay. Which was basically, you don't use an elephant gun to shoot a rabbit.
Absolutely. So this idea that you can go overkill. Now, I should say, as we record this, although this won't come out for a little while yet, it is a few days after Focus on Imaging here in the UK, and the big talk on cameras has been on the Nikon stand was the D4 and the D800, and on Canon it was the 5D Mark III, yeah. I believe, which is, you know, the what everyone are talking about. And of course there is that tendency for people to go bananas over the biggest, the greatest and the latest, but neither of us really subscribe necessarily to all the need to jump at the new carrot.
In fact, I would actually go exactly in the opposite direction. I think there is absolutely no point in being in the forefront of the leading edge of technology, because that's when you get bugs, that's when you get glitches, you get problems with new software, you get problems with new cameras. Cameras are often recalled because they got a manufacturing problem when the thing goes into production. So if a new camera body, which I like the look of, comes on the market, it will be at least a year before I buy it. Because by that time they should have got all the manufacturing bugs out of it, and all those people who have jumped in to be the first with the latest new toy will then have been moaning about whatever the deficiencies or disadvantages are, and they will hopefully be put right by the time I buy it. Also, of course, by that time the price will have dropped considerably.
Absolutely. And taking as an example, I mean, regular listeners will know, if you've heard the two of us talking in the past, Hugh is a Canon user, I'm a Nikon guy. We'll say no more about that at the moment. We've had this debate in the past, and I'll link to that in the show notes. But for me, as a Nikon user, a lot of people, obviously, looking at the D4 now, which is high quality video and what have you, if you were to look down at that, a lot of people would say, well, you need to look at the D3S, which for a long time was, you know, the what you should be looking at if you're wanting to shoot video. So you have to ask yourself the question, are you a stills photographer or are you a video guy, or are you trying to bridge both gaps? If video is the option, they brought out the D7000 following the D3S, which by Nikon's own admission has better video, and it's a damn sight cheaper than a D3S. So yeah. Again, if you've got the money to spend, you just need to find out exactly what it is, where your priorities lie,
as to what your output is going to be.
Yep. So it's the right tool for the right job, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And you need to know what it is you're going to use, and how you're going to use it, and for what purpose, and what the emphasis on your workflow is going to be.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, at Focus on Imaging, I was talking to various people like Profoto and Bowens and the other major lighting manufacturers. And, you know, we were saying a lot of people, their entry into lighting photographs is, aside from using the sun and reflected light, they're looking at speed lights, small flash guns. Nothing wrong with that. I use them regularly, remotely and what have you. But there does come a point where, again, depending on the shoot in hand and what you're trying to photograph, whether you're trying to freeze action, like extreme sports, or whether you're trying to light a model in a darkened room or whatever it might be, there comes a point where those speed lights are not going to do what you need them to do. And I had an example of this going back just before Christmas. A lot of you guys listening will have seen the photographs of the trials bikes that I shot. By the time we packed up, it was getting dark, and this was, I think it was just before Christmas, so you can imagine what it was like. And the batteries were failing left, right and centre on the speed lights, on the pocket wizards, what have you. If I'd been using the sort of portable lights made, say, by Bowens with the pack that goes with it, they're more powerful, they last longer, and they're not as affected by conditions.
Yeah.
That was a prime example where actually that equipment would have been in the latter stages of the day when the temperature dropped and the dampness started to creep in. That would have been suitable.
You don't have to buy it, you can hire it.
Absolutely. And this is why we both cringe when we see people with a handful of cash salivating over a magazine reading these articles.
Yeah.
That is exactly true. You can go somewhere like Hire a Camera.
Yeah.
And we'll link to that in the show notes. And they're a great company who you can say, for example, if you wanted to try, I don't know, the latest Canon L lens, whatever, or Nikon lens, whatever, you can actually hire it for a couple of days or a weekend or a week and try it. And it's
a lot cheaper than buying it.
It is, because to spend 1,800 quid and then find that the lens doesn't do what you personally want it to do,
is a huge mistake.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've borrowed a lens on shoots and within 3 minutes have found that actually I prefer my sort of 11 year old predecessor of that. I'm not sure what those beeps were in the background, but
it wasn't anything in this room.
How strange. maybe it's the people at Nikon and Canon sort of getting wind of this, who knows. But absolutely. So those of you that aspire to using certain equipment, you should never feel that you have to make that investment and spend a fortune out. But you have to always remember what it is that you're going to be shooting.
Charles, how long have you been a professional photographer?
About 11 or 12 years.
How often have you had to produce a photograph, an image, print, that's larger than A3?
I can probably count those on both hands for immediate use.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
That I know of. They could have, afterwards.
What you have actually told me is that any 10 megapixel decent camera will do whatever it is that you need to do.
Well, there was a prime example.
Which is back to my elephant gun to shoot an elephant.
Well,
so who needs a 36 megapixel camera?
Which is what the D800 is. There was an example. I was shooting for a client some years ago, and this is back in the days when I was shooting regularly on a Nikon D2H, which, as a friend of mine likes to say, not even Nikon likes that camera. it was a bit of a beast. It was only 4 megapixels, and even at that time there were higher resolution cameras at a reasonable price point coming out.
Yeah, but you loved it, didn't you?
I loved it to bits, and because it was very fast for the time and clients were happy with the results, I was happy with the results, so there's no reason to change. But there was an example where a client of mine wanted full vehicle wraps of imagery put on the side of their new fleet of vans. And I'd taken these shots on this D2H, having discussed with them what the usage was going to be. And it was their brochures, flyers, web use. So I thought, okay, that's fine. Now, we both know what we feel about the whole pixel debate is more really better, and you know, it's exactly what we're talking about. But well, they took that picture, or one of those pictures, they even cropped it, and upscaled it using something like Genuine Fractals or an equivalent, and you could see perfectly clear all the details from a crop of a 4-megapixel picture on the size of something like a Ford Transit or like you know. And even to this day, people don't believe me. And at one point, I was starting to question my the truthfulness of my statement. I went back and looked at all the metadata of that file, and sure enough, it was shot in the evening with a single flashlight on a D2H.
Yeah.
Incredible. You wouldn't have thought it, but you know.
Well, so surely the reason that Canon and Nikon, who are going for bigger and better image sensors, the only reason for doing this is to persuade photographers who are yearning for the latest all-singing, all-dancing, bell-pushing wonder to buy it.
Yeah.
Well, if you've been in photography for any length of time, you establish a collection of lenses which produces for you satisfactory results.
Yeah.
Not only for you, but also for the clients that you're shooting for. And you stay with them forever.
Yes.
I mean, some of the lenses I have are 10, 15 years old, and I'm perfectly happy with them.
Yeah.
And I believe that the limiting factor for most photographers is the optical quality of the lenses and not the camera body itself.
Yeah.
And so the sensor debate is, I suspect, nothing really more or less than a marketing ploy by the manufacturer to keep the sales going.
I mean, I have never, when I was looking to invest in a new body and it was the D3 that I was looking at, there was the whole kind of, you know, do I go for a D3 because it's a full frame? Do I stick to the DX format so all my lenses will definitely still work as opposed to some of them? And when I say still work, I mean without having a cropped image. In terms of the camera body itself, I actually really wasn't bothered whether it was full frame or not, because at the end of the day, I've got that viewfinder to look for, and I just have to move forward a bit, back a bit, whatever, to compose the pictures as I always have done since I was 8 years old when I first picked up a camera.
Yeah.
It's the same process. I wasn't really worried too much about full frame or not.
Well, all I can tell you, Giles, is that I am stuck with Canon because I have fallen in love with two EFS lenses. That's the crop sensor lenses. Mm. The ultra wide. The one my favourite lens, which is the 17-55, and then the lens which is a sort of fit all is the f/4. Image stabilized 70-200, which is an L series lens.
Yeah,
and I have never been defeated. Every lens I shoot is done on those three lenses, and the 17-55 is a miracle lens. It's not an L series lens, although it should be. It does everything I want it to do. I won't shift from a crop sensor to a full frame sensor because of that lens. And everybody thinks I'm raving mad. And I don't care. It's a beautiful lens, and I will use it forever.
So why do people still shoot on 30-year-old Leicas? It's exactly the same thing. They're happy with the results.
Yes.
You know.
And so are their clients.
Yeah, absolutely.
If we went on like this, of course, no one would ever buy anything.
No.
So why do you think people chase the latest all singing, all dancing wonder? Do you honestly think that some of these maniacs will think that if I buy this camera body, I will actually be able to shoot pictures like David Bailey?
Well, that's what they're told, isn't it?
But do they believe it? I mean, these are real professional photographers who earn their money by taking pictures. Why do they fall for this bullshit?
Because it's prestige. It's being seen to be using the latest and greatest kit. If I'm walking around an event and there's a guy there with, say, a D4, you think, oh, okay, he's got a D4. I don't think any more about it like that because I know exactly how I feel about this. But a lot of people would look at that and they would be envious. They think he must be a better photographer. There is that kind of prestige that comes with it.
Well, I have a Canon 7D, and I say it's not going to be long before the 7D Mark II comes out. I know that because Canon have just produced the 5D Mark III.
Mm.
So the 7D Mark II can't be far behind. Mm. And unless it's spectacularly different, and I can't see how it can be, because I believe the 7D was a camera that answered nearly every requirement that any reasonable photographer could possibly want.
Mm.
But my backup camera is a 40D, and I've had that for, ever since it came out.
Mm.
And I think it's superior to the 50D, the 60D, and all the other things that they got. And I won't change it, because it's a lovely camera.
Mm. But I'm in a position where before long I'm going to need to upgrade my second camera.
Yeah.
And so I will most likely be looking at something like a D7000.
Yeah.
And in fact,
Not a D8000.
D800?
Yeah.
No. That's still at around about
Well, is it supposed to be a whisker under 2400?
Yeah. But I mean, as a colleague of mine who actually has a D7000, and we both shoot similar stuff, and even at similar events. And at a recent event, he was saying that he shoots on a D3 and on a D7000, and the D7000 is not as rugged a body. It has the vertical grip you have as a bolt-on rather than it being built in. But he was saying that he shot 90% of his shots over the course of this event on his D7000,
mm-hmm.
which is, according to the marketing spiel, is the lower level camera. You know, in terms of build quality and what have you. But at the end of the day, he had specific shots he needed to get, and he knew that camera was giving him the better results.
Well, going back years to when we were all shooting on film, I wasn't a Canon person, nor a Nikon person. Mm. I was a Minolta person.
Yeah, oh yes. Oh, I remember the the times you tried to get me to buy into the Minolta.
The best film camera that Minolta ever bought was a 7XI.
Yeah, is that the one that would focus on a white wall?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you could get a good lock on a plain white wall.
Yeah.
And they've never seen an autofocusing system since.
Mm.
And it came anywhere near it.
Yeah. I think the greatest shame with not just cameras, any sort of technology, and of course it's the same with motoring, is the immediate depreciation.
Well, so don't buy new then.
Well, exactly. But this is why I feel so sorry for enthusiasts who read these magazine reviews, who we both know that they aren't, can be questionable at times, shall we say. Let's keep it quite diplomatic. But they have saved up maybe all year in the lead up, say, to Focus on Imaging or the last 6 months. And off the back of what one guy says about a camera that he's tested for a long weekend, they part with £1,800 of their hard-earned cash.
I think the reviews that count are the reviews that people have used the camera for 6, 7, 8 months, or actually do a review on something they've owned for a year and used it daily. Then you can actually take some notice of what they say.
Well, I can give you two examples. I'm just about to publish a review about a waterproof jacket made by a company called Paramo, and they are extremely good. I've had that for near on a year, and it has been through everything. It's been underground, it's been up Scarfell Pike here in torrential rain, terrible conditions. But then I also, not so long ago, tested the Fujifilm X100. But I was only granted that for a month and a half. And I've said in my article, in my review, I started off saying, look, here are a few ground rules about this review. For one thing, you can't possibly expect to understand a camera within a month and a half. I've known it be 18 months or more still to not totally understand how to get the best out of a camera.
Don't you actually find, whenever I change my camera body, which is not very often.
Mm.
Once a month, I will set an evening aside. I will take the camera, sit in my office, study, call it what you like,
mm-hmm.
with the manual, and I will go through the manual from start to finish. I will either remind myself of facilities which I'd forgotten,
mm.
or I will often learn something completely new that the camera can do that I didn't know it could.
Yeah.
And it takes, well, I suppose you could actually say that 3 years later, you're still learning things about the camera body.
I dare say there's stuff on that D2H which I didn't realise was there. Because, sure, as you know, in a working environment, you use sort of, I don't know what the statistics would be, but I guess it would be 20% of the functions 90% of the time.
Oh, if you take that, take that as an example, what about Photoshop? If you you see the latest version of Photoshop, what proportion of Photoshop do you think the average working photographer, and I hasten to add working photographer, not graphics designer, will use?
Well, I've made this point, regular listeners will know, that I never profess to be an expert of Photoshop. I keep my workflow, my post-production, to an absolute minimum, preferring to get it right in camera as much as I can. And as a result, I probably only know a handful of functions, probably no more than about 20 key functions. And we're talking about how to do layers and cloning and sort of Gaussian blur and all this sort of only things that I would actually use. And even half of those I don't use a lot. I just happen to know of them. Because over the last 10, 12 years, whatever, I've not had to.
Okay, let me ask you a question. All the photographic magazines rabbit on endlessly about layers.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you actually use layers?
The only time I generally use layers is to put a watermark or branding on a picture.
And or type.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fine. Otherwise, you don't ever use it.
No.
Fine. And yet, if you read the photographic magazines, you'd be persuaded that it was an essential knowledge.
I can't be doing with 18 different layers to try and work out which one I'm actually working on. I haven't got time for that. All the time that I'm in post-production is time I'm not being outside generating revenue, not networking with people, not being a photographer in the sense of capturing photographs.
But you see, if you actually talk to as I do often, talk to photographic societies, all the question inevitably comes round to what do I think of layers? And I usually answer, well, it's very good if you're a graphics designer or a typographer.
Mm.
It's not much help if you're a photographer.
Mm.
In fact, I can't think of any time I've ever used layers to improve or work on a photograph.
Well, my workflow is I will import the pictures. I will open them up in Bridge.
Yep.
I will do a basic adjustment in Camera Raw, which normally is my general amount of sharpening, just adjusting the black channel ever so slightly just to richen up the darker areas.
Yeah.
And that is it. I will export them, then convert them, say, fragments sake, to JPEGs, and I'll look through Photoshop just to make sure I'm really happy with the sharpness of all of them, or if there was a choice between a couple that I wanted to double check.
Giles, it's time you moved over to Lightroom.
I have tried Lightroom, Hugh. You know I have, and I couldn't get on with it.
Brilliant.
It was fine until I was using my D3, and it just went to an absolute crawl. So
yeah, but use Lightroom 3 now.
Well, maybe I should.
Yeah, use Lightroom 3.
But I have to.
And use it on a Mac.
Okay. Wait, that's another debate.
Not on a Microsoft monster.
No, absolutely. It probably should be emphasised that it's not that I have anything against Mac. I am using PC at the moment, and in the fullness of time, I will be switching, but now is not that time. Well, and
I wrestle with Windows-driven PCs for years and years, and was exasperated by all the messages that I used to get.
Mm.
My son, who is a Cisco engineer, advised me years ago to buy a Mac. The editors I write for always
want me to... Oh, they make perfect sense. They absolutely make sense. Finally,
a year ago, I went and bought a Mac. All I can tell you is I've had no downtime. Nothing's gone wrong.
Yeah.
I've had no weird Windows messages. And I've only had to make two updates.
Well, there you go. So the moral of the story is, if there's anyone from Mac listening and they fancy supplying anything for test and review, I'll happily give it a 6-month trial and see. I will tell you how I've become converted, probably.
That's fine.
But I think that's, you know, a probably good place to round this up so we don't go on and on and on. But what are your passing thoughts?
Don't use an elephant gun to shoot a rabbit, which is where we came in.
I think that's going to be the title of this week's podcast. Hugh, again, thank you very much for your time. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Don't forget to give some feedback, and we'll catch up again soon. It would be really good to hear from any of you who, in all honesty, have made equipment purchases based on what you were told by others, only to find out that actually there was no reason to have invested in the first place. I wonder how many of you will hold your hands up to this admission. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter at Giles Babbage. There's a Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or, of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great week, and I will speak to you all very soon.
Member of the CurrentPhotographer.com podcast network. Find more great photography shows at CurrentPhotographer.com/podcast.